Hello, boys and girls. Welcome to another episode of Talking Honor. My name is Harley R. Padgett. I cover Ring of Honor for the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter. That involves, weekly TV, live events, things like that. Every Tuesday, I'm joined by Emily Fear for this podcast, and we talk about the week in Ring of Honor. That usually involves all the happenings on Ring of Honor television, and also any other ROH-related news from the world of wrestling, such as New Japan's G1 Climax Tournament, or a big event happening on September 1st called All In, because obviously the three guys running that show are ROH stars, and a lot of ROH talent is on that show, and we had a lot of All In news this week. We're going to be getting into all of that. If I have background noise, I apologize. It is currently 86 degrees Fahrenheit, 30 degrees Celsius in my apartment, and I don't want to die. Hello, Emily.
Hey, Harley. No, good call. No death. No dying on audio, please. I don't think that would be very pleasant to listen to.
Yes. Cue up the soundbite of the wrestling fans chanting, please don't die. Please don't die. On my behalf.
Well, speaking of those who aren't dead yet, I will give a little recap as to the world of New Japan Pro Wrestling, specifically the G1 Climax 28. When we last spoke last week, I gave a kind of rundown and focusing on the reigning storyline of A Block, or at least one of the big storylines coming out of A Block this year, which is Hangman Page just being a boss and doing his hangman thing over in New Japan and impressing the heck out of, pretty much everyone he competes against and everyone he competes in front of. So even though his point total has not been stellar, he has a greater loss record than wins. He's just been wowing fans and his opponents left and right. So when we last spoke, he was still at 2 points. Those 2 points were earned on his first night in competition against Bad Luck Fale in a match that ended in a DQ finish. So he got the 2 points that way. Not a bad way to start the tournament, except for the fact that, not a, amazing way to get 2 points in general. So that things have turned a little bit, and whether it's because of a certain book inspiration that people saw, that maybe viewers and listeners at home saw on BTE, or whether it's just Hangman turning a corner, we got to see him in the last two A Block main events come out on top and get wins over Makabe. And then most startlingly on Sunday, Hangman Page in his match against Suzuki came out victorious. So he's up to 6 points, but really the story here is that Hangman Adam Page just won against Minoru Suzuki in New Japan Pro Wrestling's G1 Climax 28. This is just pretty fantastic. He is mathematically eliminated from being able to win A Block, but he's still doing his thing and he's doing it well. And chances are we're going to be talking about Page a little bit more later on in this episode. Quick note on Kenny Omega. So when we last spoke, Kenny Omega was on a seemingly endless, seemingly impossible to beat winning streak. He was at 10 points that quickly became 12 points when he won over Zack Sabre Jr. Late last week. But then on Saturday, Mr. Omega, our friend Kenny, finally saw defeat at the hands of Tomohiro Ishii. And Ishii's been doing another, great job this realm. He's definitely done the G1 before, and he has been a standout star in B Block. And that's saying something, because B Block is really, absolutely tremendous. A Block has its stellar moments, but B Block really has been the spotlight getting block of this year's tournament. And Ishii has been holding his own and really making matches against pretty much every opponent he's faced. So he managed to get a win out over Kenny Omega and bloodied Omega in the process. Some pretty brutal blood pouring out of Omega's mouth towards by the end of that match. But Yeah, so Omega is no longer on an undefeated streak. He's officially lost one match in the G1, and he's at 12 points. He's still on top of B Block, but it's going to come down to his next two matches. And going into Wednesday, we will see him take on Toru Yano, which will be it's a Yano match. So who knows what could happen? Probably some turnbuckles will come loose. Maybe some tape will come out. Who knows? But yeah.
It might actually be could be fun for Kenny. It's a chance to sort of channel his old DDT days.
That's a really good point. And in an interview leading up to the G1 climax, he was asked about his match against Yano and kind of reflected about comedy matches and how important they are in wrestling and how much he enjoys getting to do those in addition to all the other wrestling work that he's done. And that he really likes to work with Yano. And in Night 13's match, in the tag matches that preceded the block matches, him and Chase Owens took on Toriano and Gato. And, you know, it was great to see Omega getting to have some fun in that match, considering how intense the Ishii match had been. So, you know, it's fun to look forward to an Omega match that might be something that's a little less intense and something that's, you know, a little bit more light. But who knows? Because if Yano gets that win, then Omega's in a rough spot going into his final block match against his Golden Lovers partner, Kota Ibushi. So this could all be setting up something really intense for Saturday.
Yeah, so everybody pretty much most people only have two matches left in the tournament, right?
A-block matches, I believe. Oh, gosh, I'm going to be put on the spot here. A-block matches have one match left. B-block matches have two matches left. We've got Wednesday and Friday, Saturday, and the finals on Sunday.
Okay, so by next week's podcast, you'll be able to talk all about the winner.
I will have survived G1 Climax 28, and I will be able to talk about the winner, and I will have gone through a emotional roller coaster in the process, so be prepared.
So we'll find out either who's facing Kenny, theoretically, in January.
Theoretically, yes.
Yeah, assuming he's still champion then, or if he wins. The big question will be posed as to who he chooses to face come January.
Yeah, there hasn't been, again, I think I mentioned this last week, there has not been a winner, a reigning champion in the G1 to win the G1 since 2002, maybe? It's been a long time. So Kenny, that's what Kenny's looking to do. He's looking to take B Block and then take the final. But he's going to have to get through some pretty stiff competition in order to do that. And that's looking like Kota Ibushi will possibly be his biggest roadblock going to get to the final.
And I'm sure they wouldn't have it any other way.
Oh, absolutely. Nope. Saturday's gonna probably destroy us all. So look for me on Twitter being inconsolable and hyperventilating along with a lot of other people. So yeah, that'll be fun. Fun times ahead.
Well, Emily, you're all in.
I am all in.
You will be in Chicago on September 1st, rather, in 3 short weeks. That's scary close.
That's scary close.
And we got some big news yesterday. Yesterday, if you're listening to this on the Tuesday live cast. So we got a couple matches. We got broadcasting details. Let's start with the broadcasting details. All In is going to be available on pay-per-view, traditional pay-per-view, just like in the old days. Fight TV, which is how a lot of people watch ROH events and other wrestling events, I've been told. I wouldn't know because I watch my stuff on Honor Club, and All In is officially going to be available through Honor Club as well. So that's huge for a lot of us.
That's so enormous for Honor Club subscribers. How fantastic is that? And it's fun to know that since I... maybe I shouldn't say this on air. It's good to know that we'll have access to that. And it's great to know that, like, we can come home from All In and potentially watch it again through Honor Club and be able to, like, pick up things that we didn't, you know, we missed because of the live environment. So that's very exciting.
Yeah, that's something that maybe won't be touched on as much either, is you watch on pay-per-view, you can watch it, like, once. Maybe PVR it, keep it on your PVR. But if you have Honor Club, you can watch the show over and over as many times as you want, a year from now, 2 years from now, presumably. I'm assuming it's going to be part of the Honor Club catalog afterwards, just like any other ROH event.
Yeah, I'm curious about that because ROH isn't, it's very curious because ROH doesn't really own this event, but they, you know, in providing Honor Club streaming and expanding All In's audience to, you know, all of its Honor Club members, I'm guessing that they have worked out a deal that they can retain it at least for some time on the, you know, through that service. That's interesting. It would be very boring to go into the legal specifics, but it is interesting if that was the deal that was worked out.
Yeah, I shouldn't announce that that's like confirmed. That's definitely going to happen. But that's my assumption, is if it's airing through Honor Club, it's going to be part of Honor Club permanently.
Well, I sure hope so, because with Honor Club, it's always, there is always the potential for these big, big events that there's going to be some issues with the streaming and with the, you know, being able to get connected and people getting locked out. So I do hope, and I hope for myself, because I want to be able to rewatch it, you know, after the being there live, I do hope that they'll be able to retain it at least for some time.
Yeah, so the main card starts 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Chicago's Eastern Time, right? I don't know, you're American. I don't know where anything is in America.
No, actually, Chicago is Central Time. So So while those in the Eastern time zone will be watching it at 7, we will be technically, I believe, at 6 p.m.
All right. A nice early night for you folks. Well, depending on how long the show goes, we don't know. But 7 p.m. Eastern time, it's going to be available on Pay-Per-View, Fight TV, and Honor Club. Prior to that, from 6 to 7, there is what they're calling Zero Hour, kind of a pre-show, kickoff show, exclusively on WGN America. This is where my questions come in, Emily, because I don't live in America. So yes. I don't have television at all. And if I did have television, I still wouldn't have WGN America.
It's most likely not.
Yeah, based on the name, that's my guess. So is WGN America one of these channels where you can also, say, live stream their live feed through their website? Or is it just a TV-only thing?
I'm looking right now. Actually, I'm just kind of double-checking the website because I looked before and didn't get any conclusive results. I am almost certain that you cannot stream directly through the WGN website.
Hey, PW Torch fans, it's Sam Roberts, the last professional broadcaster, here to tell you about my podcast, Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast, every Thursday morning on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Spotify, on YouTube, notsam.com. Wherever you get podcasts, you will find it. Interviews with the A-list of pro wrestling, whether it's Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Roman Reigns, Daniel Bryan, just recently Corey Graves, Mauro Ranallo. They're all guests of Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast, as well as regulars like Dan Soder and one of my favorite people to talk about pro wrestling with, Wade Keller. Plus, every week we do a deep dive and analyze what's going on in the world of pro wrestling this week with the state of wrestling. Bruce Pritchard calls it the best interview in wrestling podcasts. I don't know if that's true, but that's what Bruce Pritchard says. Subscribe now. Get it every Thursday morning across podcast platforms, or get the premium version at stitcher.com/notsam.
Okay, so our assumptions, and we'll try to get clarification, confirmation for next week's episode or as we get close to the show, would be that the only way to watch this 1 hour, 0 hour kickoff show would be to own a television set, live in America, and tune to whatever channel WGN is in your region.
Yeah, it's looking like that.
Because they use the word exclusively. So that leads me to believe that the 1 hour from 6 to 7 won't be on pay-per-view or on a club or Fight TV.
No, if it's exclusive, the chances are that's going to be on WGN only. And I made a mistake early on thinking that WGN, I just kind of had a mental, blank. I thought for a moment that WGN was the channel that hosted ROH, but of course that's not true because it's not a Sinclair Media channel. So, but WGN is usually, like, if you're in the States at least, it's usually available through like a typical like digital antenna broadcast realm. Like I can get WGN on my TV and I don't have full cable. But if you get it, if you have a basic cable package or if you have like a digital antenna, you can access it in the States fairly easily.
Okay, so that's good news for some of you Americans. For the rest of us on the planet, hopefully we'll figure something out. We'll try to get information next week as to whether or not there's any way to watch it through a WGN website, or maybe they'll make it the pre-show available through Fight TV for a nominal fee as well. I mean, obviously, I want to see the whole show. I want to see the pre-show especially. They've announced today two matches for the pre-show, and both of them are intriguing. It's going to be the Briscoes versus Frankie Kazarian and Scorpio Sky. And, I mean, as we saw in this week's episode of Ring of Honor Television, tensions are high between the Briscoes and SCU.
That's right. Yeah. Leading into All In, this pre-show matchup between the Briscoes and Kazarian and Scorpio Sky is actually like a really, like, is really well tied into the storyline of that it's happening in ROH right now. In a way that, you know, say Christopher Daniels match is more tied to BTE than it is to ROH in any specific way.
Yes, because Christopher Daniels is wrestling the Green Arrow himself.
That is correct. Yeah, Stephen Amell, who he, who Daniels framed for murder because of why? Because of just quibbles with how Arrow is running. He's not happy with the show.
Yeah, I was a little foggy still on why Daniels tried to frame Stephen Amell for the murder of Joey Ryan. But he did, and there's bad blood there now for sure. This is officially, for Stephen Amell fans, this will be his third wrestling match in history, his first singles match ever. So you don't follow WWE, Emily, so you probably didn't know this. But Stephen Amell made his wrestling debut at WWE SummerSlam 2015, teaming with Adrian Neville to take on the man now known as, is it Stu Bennett, over on World of Sports, the former Wade Barrett. And Wade Barrett teamed against Amell with a man known as Cody Rhodes.
Interesting. Okay, so that's
how Cody and Steven, it was one of these classic, they hate each other, they wrestle, they gain respect for each other, and now they're best friends.
So but Amell only wrestled two matches?
So that was his debut, was that tag match, Amell and Neville against Cody and Barrett.
Okay.
In August 2015. Then 2 years later, this past November actually, so not that long ago, at ROH Survival of the Fittest, it was a 5-on-4 handicap match where Stephen Amell teamed with Cody, Kenny Omega, and the Young Bucks to take on Flip Gordon and SCU.
Huh.
So there you go. Stephen Amell's trajectory. His first match, he tag teams against Cody. Now they're good friends. His second match, he teams with Cody and the Bucks and Kenny against SCU. And now it's Stephen Amell and Christopher Daniels one-on-one.
Wow. Very interesting. How is he as, have you seen these matches? How is he as a wrestler?
I have seen both. Unfortunately, they were a while ago, and I've seen a lot of wrestling since. I can't say I remember anything too strongly. I do remember that people were impressed with his abilities. There's been a lot of, especially in WWE over the past 30, 35 years, there's been a lot of celebrities wrestling, right? Drew Carey came in and has wrestled, so has Shaquille O'Neal and Hugh Jackman. Snooki from Jersey Shore, many, many celebrities coming in and wrestling. And I know I'd like to say in amongst the criteria of wrestlers doing, of actors doing guest wrestling spots, Amell was top of the heap or near the top. Like they were really impressed with his abilities.
All right.
And every wrestler starts somewhere, right? Like at one point, Cody was the guy who's only wrestled two matches to his name.
Yeah, so, I mean, and against a veteran like Daniels, if Amell's got some, you know, abilities in ring, you know, despite being fairly, you know, still fairly green, with a veteran like Daniels, we could be seeing something pretty, pretty solid, honestly. I think that we could see them being good counterparts for each other because, you know, Daniels can certainly hold his own in ring, but he can, you know, do a lot of work to make his opponents look great, too.
And Daniels, one of the all-time greats, only Ring of Honor Grand Slam champion. But this week on TV, pinned by Bushi, a couple of weeks ago on TV, pinned by Eli Isom.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't discount Stephen Amell's chances here. If Eli Isom can pin Daniels, anything can happen.
Yeah, I mean, and especially, you know, as you said, with Isom and with Bushi, now the, you know, arrow is primed for a surprise win. Plus, he's got to avenge being framed for murder, so.
Yeah, you gotta, maybe the ghost of Joey Ryan gets involved in this one somehow?
I mean, Joey Ryan is involved, the ghost of Joey Ryan.
Joey Ryan may or may not be dead. It's unclear at this point.
Exactly. So it's possible the ghost of Joey Ryan, I mean, the ghost is booked for All In. So.
Or for StarCast, maybe? I don't know about All In.
I thought so. Maybe not. Maybe not?
I don't know. I don't have him on my list of announced talent.
Ah, okay. Maybe it's just for StarCast then. I mean, it is hard to book a ghost for a wrestling match.
True. That's why we never got to see the big blow-off between Casper and Richie Rich. Theoretically, that's my assumption why we never saw that.
I mean, how do you pin a ghost? It's like, you're just going to go right through them.
Exactly. That's why it's such a good gimmick.
Yeah.
So we got another match announced as well. Also for the 0 Hour kickoff show. They're calling it the Over Budget Battle Royal. It's 15 people that they wanted to get on the show, but they ran out of money. So they're putting them all in a Battle Royal match. We have 5 of the 15 people booked so far. And Emily,
yes,
you were wrong.
What?
You said last week on this very podcast, listeners will back me up, that we will not see any intergender wrestling at All In. And you were wrong.
Yeah.
I
fully admit when I'm wrong, and listeners will also confirm that I said I wanted to be wrong.
Well, I hope you're happy.
I am. Because, go for it. Tell us who's up.
We got 5 people announced with 15-person Battle Royal so far, including Chicago's own Colt Cabana. If he doesn't win, the crowd's going to riot. So my money's on Colt.
Then
we've got Roppongi 3K Zone, Rocky Romero. We've got Impact Wrestling star Moose and former ROH star. We've got All Ego, Ethan Page. And we've got Jordan Grace announced so far.
Yes.
So an eclectic group by any account.
Yes, super eclectic. I'm rather curious to see if we get more women in this Battle Royale. I'm interested to see if we get Jonathan Gresham in this Battle Royale because of his connection with Jordan Grace and just because, you know, also with his ROH connection. And But I'm psyched to be wrong. I really am. I love Jordan Grace's work. I've managed to find what I can online. I like what she's done with Progress and with all the other promotions that she's worked for. She's a phenomenal person. She's a great wrestler to follow on Twitter too. She has a lot of great things to say about intergender wrestling and being, you know, a woman wrestler in the social media sphere. But this is exciting. This Battle Royale, this like crazy budget busting one. But I do think that you're absolutely right that a combination of things indicate to me that Colt Cabana could probably take this match, and that is the Chicago being based in Chicago and him being a Chicago favorite. But also, I don't know, if you think about it, being the elite and the ability for All In to happen and to sell out, you know, 10,000 seats and have the kind of success it does really comes back to being the elite. And, you know, being the elite gets so much inspiration from the work that Colt Cabana had done that it feels fitting for him to be able to take this match, to win this match, this pre-show match, as kind of like a, you know, a thank you note to like his inspiration, like the things that he built that inspired what ended up building All In.
Yeah, I had the same thought today because we've talked a lot on our PW Torch VIP podcast, Elite Repeat, where we cover being the elite. We talked about how the Young Bucks themselves have said Colt Cabana and his business model especially was the huge inspiration for the success of their careers. Taking your own social media, your own merch into your own hands, controlling what you want to do, basing everything on just having fun. All of that came out of Colt doing his stuff with the Art of Wrestling and the Wrestling Road Diaries and all of that. So, yeah, this will be an amazing moment if Colt wins. And if it doesn't, somebody's getting a lot of heat put on them.
Yeah, they are not leaving that arena without a great deal of harassment. This is a great way to start off this show. I can't believe that this is like going to be a pre-show to All In.
This is why I'm saying I have to find a way to watch this.
Yes.
I don't get WGN America, but if I can't watch this, I'm going to be not happy.
Well, I can live stream from my phone for you. How about that?
FaceTime it for me.
That's fine, right? That's not illegal. Is it? No, I don't. It doesn't. It's fine.
So here's something also worth noting, though, is the five people in this match, as well as the Briscoes, who are also on the pre-show, none of those seven people had been previously announced for All In. So the past couple of months, we've had all these talent announcements of people who are going to be involved in the show, and it included Stephen Amell and Christopher Daniels, the other people, Rey Mysterio, Phoenix, all those people who have also announced matches. None of these five people in this battle royal had been previously announced for All In. So that raises a lot of questions too regarding the identities of the remaining 10 people in this battle royal.
And that's really exciting because if say we fill out the 10 other people that are supposed to be in this battle, that's 10 additional names that could be on the roster that are entirely new to the All In roster. And that's really exciting for those of us who already have tickets, already bought in, are already like totally psyched for what we're about to see. Like, this is just icing on the top. Like, it's fantastic. I mean, I really enjoy a lot of the people that have already been announced. I don't know much about Moose, but I definitely have seen Cole Cabana and Rocky Romero and Jordan Grace and Ethan Page wrestle. And I'm psyched to get to see them to do this in the pre-show and to, you know, add the Briscoes match on top of this too. Like, you know, I'm not a big fan of like the Briscoes gimmicks outside of the ring, but I can never dispute the fact that like the wrestling is on point and always great to watch. And, you know, if this is going to be, or if these are going to be like the, you know, 12th hour, the 11th hour surprises, this is pretty darn good surprises. This is pretty, pretty exciting way to be entering the next 3 weeks.
Searching for more great pro wrestling talk? Then join me, Jason Powell, host of the free weekly Pro Wrestling Boom podcast. Each week, you'll hear the latest news and analysis from me and my team at ProWrestling.net, along with other Pro Wrestling Media members. Plus, the Pro Wrestling Boom podcast features long-form interviews with notable names in the pro wrestling industry. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Downcast, and all your favorite secondary apps, or visit us directly at PWBoom.com. Once again, that's PWBoom.com.
Well, so I got two questions for you. One, do you have any predictions on who else might be among the 10 surprise battle royal participants? And two, do you think that recent episodes of Being the Elite have maybe tipped us off in any way? Because I feel on Being the Elite lately, these past few episodes, there have been a lot of people showing up that weren't part of the BTE universe before. This week on the show, we saw Diamond Dallas Page. We saw Billy Gunn. Yujiro Takahashi and Chase Owens have been making more appearances than usual. I don't know. There's just Juice Robinson's been on a couple episodes now. Are these just coincidences?
I wouldn't get ahead of ourselves as far as assuming that those that we're seeing, especially in like the New Japan realm of BTE, are going to be in the All In show in any specific way. Especially like as like Juice and Yujiro and Chase, like there's a potential to see them, especially Juice and Chase, who can move about freely and come to the States without too much visa issue. But with Yujiro and any of the other like Japanese talent we might be seeing on screen, that might be more difficult. But I don't want to count them out. I will say there is a match that we have not mentioned that got some mention on social media this week. And that is the Best Friends are also an All-In in some capacity. And they don't have an opponent. They are literally just in the show at some point. So they could be in this battle royal for all we know.
So that's the other thing. Even amongst all these matches, we have seven matches total announced now. But we still have here's the list of talent that's been officially announced prior to today as being all in, but don't have matches yet.
Okay.
Kenny Omega, Jay Lethal, Pentagon Jr., MJF, Tessa Blanchard, Britt Baker, Penelope Ford, Chelsea Green, Madison Rayne, and best friends Beretta and Chucky T. All those people are going to be involved in the show in some way. We don't know how.
Yeah. I'm not, there's only one match amongst that group that I'm starting to feel pretty confident about. And that's, I'm starting to think that we're going to see a Kenny Omega, Jay Lethal match, a champion versus champion match.
Okay. Yeah. But, it's a strong possibility. Although all the fans are, I can't believe how many people online I see are convinced this can be Omega and CM Punk, and just, it's not happening.
I think that we could all...
They're not going to throw that match out unannounced.
No.
That'd be crazy. You could sell out another 10,000 seat show on that match alone.
Yeah, seriously. Like, come on, guys. Save that for Madison Square Garden. That's not this show. That's probably not ever going to happen as much as I would love to see that. I will not be surprised, and I will be hopeful until the very last minute of this show that CM Punk will make an appearance. If for no other reason, I will live every day a little happier having experienced a Chicago arena of 10,000 people where CM Punk makes an appearance. I will enjoy that pop till the last day of my life. That being
said, you'll be too deaf to do another podcast.
That's true. I will also have completely lost my hearing and no longer be able to enjoy making podcasts or making music or listening to the excellent commentary of Ian Riccaboni or Don Callis or any number of people. But I'm not holding out hope that I'm not in any way, in any shape or form, in belief that we're going to see CM Punk like actually wrestle at all in, especially not against Kenny Omega. And honestly, I don't want to dismiss the abilities of CM Punk, and I don't want to say that wouldn't be a great match, but I honestly think we can get a really stellar match and that not be the match.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we'll find out. The Bucks said, I want to say it was on All Us, the behind the scenes of All In YouTube series they're doing. I think they said, like, we might not even get the whole card announced before the show. We might be left with some mystery matches as we're going on the air live, not knowing who some of these people are going to be facing or what else we're going to be seeing. So at this point, I wouldn't be surprised if we don't find out who Kenny's facing until the moment his music hits.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, it will end up partially being a process of elimination, I think, unless, you know, there is some kind of big surprise guest that hasn't been previously announced. But again, I'm starting to hone in on this champion versus champion match, and I will not be surprised if that's the one.
Okay, we'll find out sooner than later, it seems.
But as we've shown, I've been proven wrong. All In has a intergender match. Yes, it's a pre-show match. Yes, she might be the only person in that battle royal. She might be the only female in that battle royal. But it counts.
Yeah, and I don't think she'll be the only. That would just be weird booking one woman and 14 guys. That'd be a weird story to tell.
That's a pretty extreme intergender match right there. Like, I feel like to do that is even weirder than to have a couple more women in that battle.
Well, so not only are you all in, but last week on this podcast, I think it was, I mentioned that ROH is coming back to my hometown, Toronto, Ontario, Canada, November 11th for a live event, Global Wars. It'll be on Honor Club. I get to attend an ROH event in person for the first time in a couple years. You were a little bit disappointed that ROH wasn't coming back to Pittsburgh, correct?
I was, and I was wondering when they would ever come back, even though they were just here in April, and thinking, oh, maybe they will never come back to Pittsburgh. Maybe we'll never see them again. Maybe they'll never come back to the good old Rust Belt and entertain wrestling fans throughout this region.
And then?
And then they went ahead and announced two shows, one of which is a TV taping in Pittsburgh, and the other is Survival of the Fittest in Columbus.
There you go. Pittsburgh TV taping November 3rd. You get them a week before me.
That's right. But you get Global Wars and we get a TV taping. I'm just saying.
I don't know. What's it? Which is better?
I love the TV taping. I mean, I've only been to
I haven't been to a television taping in... Oh, I think the last time I saw a wrestling show taped was WCW Nitro in 99.
Whoa.
And yeah, I was a 14-year-old boy at the time.
I want to hear more details on that later. But I will say that I really do enjoy the TV taping format for ROH because they film 4 episodes. It's broken up in a really like good flow. The night feels, even though it's rather long, the night doesn't feel super long. Although that might have just been the specific episodes that we had at the Pittsburgh taping in April. So I'm excited for that. I think you end up getting even more matches than you might get at a house show. That being said, they're TV taping, so it does depend on who is around, who is on the tour, who's going into Global Wars the following week. So we could be seeing some people who will be featured in those shows in the following week, but we could also be seeing, you know, whoever's around prior to that Global Wars tour.
Okay. Well, it's 3 months.
Yes.
So much can change in 3 months.
So much can change. But that's exciting.
It's a TV taping, so there's a good chance that you might get some sort of 5 or 6 man Bullet Club match of some sort.
Yes, and probably a TV title challenge. I wouldn't be surprised.
Perhaps. This week, we did get our monthly Bullet Club multi-man main event. This time, instead of it being a sort of classic 5-on-5 or 4-on-4 match, it was a trios triple threat match. The return of the Hung Bucks, Adam Page and the Young Bucks versus SoCal Uncensored, SCU, and Los Ingobernables de Japón, which of course is Bushi, Evil, and Sonata in the ROH iteration, at least. For some reason, I thought it was going to be Cody and the Bucks. I thought Page is over in Japan. He's been doing the G1 for a while now. He's not around. We're not going to see him on ROH TV for a while. So I was really surprised when his music hit and he came walking out.
I think that this was recorded right before the G1, right before the G1 special. I'd have to look up the dates for it. But yes, I... Oh, no. Okay. This was filmed. We're still in Fairfax. So this was filmed the day after Best in the World. So this was a couple weeks prior to the G1 special and the G1.
Is that June 30th then?
Yeah, it would have been June 30th.
Wow, over five weeks ago.
Yes, yeah. And so Paige was definitely still around because it was right after Best in the World. So he was right there. And before he headed off for the G1. And I tell you what, you know, this match, if I had seen it prior to the G1, you know, granted, Paige has been doing great work throughout the year. He's been doing great work for a while now. This match really, like, I don't know how you feel, Harley, but like Paige is an MVP in this match. Like pretty much every sequence that has flow and perfect momentum and has the kind of execution that you really want to see, it has Paige at the center of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
If you feel that way, then okay.
Okay. I don't disagree,
but I'm sitting here having watched the episode a couple hours ago, and I can't say that I remember that. I remember him jumping out to me, I guess. But maybe because of the G1, you were focusing in on him more than I was.
I mean, it's possible I was, but I really do end up watching the other guys as much. But I just want to give you an illustration of like, okay, so I rewatched this match about an hour ago, and somewhere in the middle of the match, there is like a minute and a half sequence where it's all Paige dominant. And in that process, he buckle bombs. Okay, let's see. He
hits the buckle bomb on Sonata.
Yeah.
The Bucks kick him in the back of the head at the same time.
Okay, before that, he gets a drop. He gets some kind of dark zone, Evil and Bushi. He gets a buckle bomb. Like, then, like, you know, 20 seconds later, he gets a buckle bomb on Sonata into the Bucks kicks. Then it's a shooting star on Sonata for a 2 count. And then a moonsault on Evil.
And it's all, this is all within like a minute and a half. He dominates this match. Like my notes are like, just like, you know, every major movement. And he's in like 70% of these notes.
Okay. See, I remember in these matches, everybody hits their signature moves at some point. And there's so many, there's like a, you know, there's a minute where A comes in, takes out B with his move, then C takes out B, then D takes out C, then E takes out D, those sort of things. Or we have a couple moments where this guy flies onto everybody at ringside, and then this guy flies onto that guy and everybody, and this guy flies onto that those two guys and everybody, and sort of thing. So, yeah, I can't say that Paige stood out to me in any way more than anyone else. I do feel like LIJ didn't stand out to me all that much. Like, I don't remember them having any truly too memorable sequences or moves. Where I do remember Daniels having some spotlight times in the ring, and Scorpio hitting a really nice catapult,
yes,
twisting cutter at one point. Yeah, I remember those. And there are a couple of really fun sequences where everybody was coming in trying to drop an elbow on their opponent, and everybody kept rolling out of the way, stuff like that.
Yeah, I have some notes on Sonata here. Like, Sonata definitely, of the LIJ group, got, I think, the most time in ring as far as focus. A lot of this is him kind of taking punishment, not necessarily delivering it, which is, you know, it's all the G1 that I've been watching, but it is kind of odd for me to be seeing. And this is very, like, I will admit, watching ROH, watching like Adam Page and the Bucks interact with LIJ in ROH versus like just the nonstop onslaught of Sonata matches and Page matches and, you know, all the Bullet Club stuff and everything that is happening with G1. It's just a very like weird effect of like trying to remember that like these things don't necessarily look the same in either promotion. Sometimes they do and sometimes they don't. And LIJ definitely looks a little different in the ROH perspective than it does in New Japan. I mean, case in point, like Sonata gets a lot of time here, but like, I don't know that I have any notes on anything that Evil does in this match, which is very odd.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
Yeah, see, so I represent on this show the person who watches ROH, watches everything ROH, but doesn't follow New Japan, really. I read the headlines and I keep track of interesting news, but I don't watch New Japan. I don't have a subscription to New Japan World. And I'd be very curious. I almost love ROH to sort of like run a poll if they could and try to figure out what the crossover is. I feel like I'm in the minority. I feel like most people, if you follow ROH regularly, you also watch New Japan, all the big shows at the very least, if not every single G1 event. But I don't know. I don't know what the real numbers are there. But as somebody who just watches ROH and not New Japan, I mean, I still feel like I don't really know all that much about who LIJ are. In all honesty, I can't tell you their signature moves outside of Sonata's Paradise Lock. I don't know what Evil's finishing move looks like. I don't know anything about Bushi other than this week he wore a Venom mask.
He has many masks. Bushi takes very good care of himself, and there's lots of other details. But when it comes to LIJ's presence in ROH, you're right. There isn't a whole lot of context given for what they are known for in New Japan. I think Sonata has been able to do a little bit more in his time in ROH, like when he makes appearances. For whatever reason, I'm not really sure why. Obviously, guys like Naito, they have a presence and an obvious gimmick that like that carries with them in both promotions. But someone like Evil, you do have to kind of follow more thoroughly through New Japan to get kind of what makes him such a special performer.
Yeah, it's a tough. I mean, obviously ROH can't show us the complete history of all of these guys on the shows. So this is what we're given, and this is what we have to work with. I mean, to an extent, I don't need to know all of Evil's signature moves or what Bushi's story is or what his history in New Japan has been, because it's not relevant to this match. If they were challenging, you know, if Evil was challenging Jay Lethal for the world title, then I definitely would want to know more about who he is. I'd want to see maybe an enhancement match or two on ROH television to really get a sense of his moveset, things like that. But for these purposes, I don't need to know too much. But then also at the same time, I wonder if that maybe they come across as a little forgettable to me because of that.
Yeah, and that's unfortunate because I, as someone who's a big LIJ fan and a big fan of all three guys who were featured in this match, it's just, it's a shame to have them come off as forgettable when I know that they're not. Like, I know that their work stands on its own. It's just, in an ROH ring, they look different.
Yeah, and I don't know. It happens. I don't know if there's a way around it. It's one of those, you know, you're a band, you play a show in front of your hometown crowd, you go play a show on tour, totally different response with different a different setting around you. That sort of thing happens.
Yeah, but there are certain things that, I mean, ROH could consider doing as far as booking goes that might highlight these guys a little bit better. And one of them is possibly not relying so much on these big, like, multi-man tag matches, but giving these, you know, giving this imported talent more solo matches to, you know, be able to highlight their skills in a much better fashion. You know, if we were seeing one of our ROH guys go up against Evil in a solo match, in a singles match, we might get a bet, like, ROH viewers who don't follow New Japan might get a much better idea of what Evil can do in the ring. In a similar way that we've seen in past, like, War of the Worlds tours and Global Wars tours, when we have been given solo matches for these guys.
Yeah, we do get that occasionally, but usually on a bigger platform than, say, weekly television.
True, yeah. But, I mean, last week we got to see Kushida take on Jonathan Gresham in a singles match, so it's not all, even that rare in the TV taping realm. Just, I don't know. It's kind of like they like using these guys in multi-man because they get to feature all three of them at once, and those who do follow New Japan are going to be plugged in almost immediately because of that. But it may not be the best way to feature that talent.
Overall, though, I definitely liked the match. I enjoyed it. And it had been a little bit of a while. There was a period there where it felt like we were getting this kind of Young Bucks main event match like every 2 or 3 weeks on TV. It's been a bit of a break since we've had that. So it was more refreshing to me.
Yeah.
And I like that it told a story in that it furthered existing storylines. So coming out of this, it's like SoCal and Censored are clearly good guys now. We want to root for them, especially with the Briscoes interfering here, screwing them over, hitting them with a chair. It definitely seems like the Bucks and Briscoes are maybe going different ways for the time being. I don't know. Is that feud continuing, or are we moving fully into SCU versus the Briscoes?
I think we're in SCU versus the Briscoes right now. I'm not sure what that ends up meaning for the Bucks as far as like who their storylines are going to be with, what they're up to. I know that there have been spoilers shared on the internet about like what might be happening for the Bucks in the near future. So I won't speculate too much about what they could end up doing, but I do think we are firmly moving into a Briscoe's SEU feud that is going to, you know, overshadow any existing conflicts with the Bucks.
It's also a question of, it's a 3-on-2 feud. So what does that entail? At All In, it's Kaz and Scorpio against the Briscoes. But if they were to meet at, say, Death Before Dishonor, is it going to be Daniels and Kaz? Is it going to be Daniels and Scorpio? If they were to win the titles, would they do Freebird rules where all three of them hold on to the two titles and can defend as they choose? Kind of lots of question marks here in this sort of handicap feud.
Yeah.
And nobody jumps to mind as somebody the Briscoes would want to bring in. Briscoes don't really have too many friends at this point.
The Briscoes don't seem they don't really seem like, you know, partnering with outside parties type anymore.
Do they have like a third brother or a cousin that we've never met?
Jay Briscoe, Mark Briscoe, this is our cousin.
And Spike Briscoe.
George Briscoe.
Sign Guy Briscoe. Bully works for ROH. Now they can steal his gimmick, right?
Yeah, there you go.
So that was that. Opening match this week, singles competition to become number one contender for the television title. You have the former television champion, Silas Young, and you have Chris Sabin, who hadn't won a singles match in ROH all year. But he proved that he earned the spot. And it didn't feel that random. I joke, because it seems like the guy's never won a match. Why is he getting a possible title shot here? But they were quick to point out that he impressed recently as a single star in the New Japan Best of the Super Juniors tournament. You can speak to that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And they brought up the wins that he had, which were really great, which he, you know, he got some pretty dominant, pretty unexpected wins in that tournament. And even his losses, he ended up looking good. So he walked away looking really good out of Best of Super Juniors. And I think, you know, knowing what we do know now about the Motor City Machine Guns officially kind of being retired as a tag team, that makes a lot of sense for why he was given such a highlighted spot in that tournament.
Okay, so here is one of my big questions coming out of this week's TV. Is Al Shelley retired?
Alex Shelley has said in, not this episode, but has said online that he is, like, retiring from wrestling.
And that's the thing. I thought I had read, I try my damnedest to avoid spoilers out of tapings for future things. I don't want to know what's going to happen. I like being surprised week to week. Lately, ROH Wrestling's been spoiling some title changes for me, whether or not I like it. And then other things. And so, yeah, I had it spoiled for me that at these TV tapings, after this match, Alex Shelley came in the ring with a microphone and informed the live crowd that he was retiring, partially due to injuries, partially due to pursuing new occupational interests. I think you said that he graduated from college?
He's in his program to become a physical therapist. So I believe it's a master's level program.
So I was waiting for when this match was over to hear his official retirement speech and announcement. And instead they just went to commercials and that was it. They moved on. So that had me questioning, oh, maybe I was wrong. Maybe I'm misremembering things and he didn't do a retirement thing. Because all he said on commentary is that he has a concussion. He lost some teeth, had to get some new teeth. And I want to say he injured his ribs or something. He had some sort of other injury. But that was it. He didn't say anything about I'm done with wrestling or these are career-ending injuries. It just sounded like he was really hurt and banged up in the same way that Dalton Castle is. And that was kind of where they left it off.
Yeah. I have a couple theories about that because I was wondering if that was going to be announced at any point either, or if he was going to make any comments about, you know, leaving wrestling for a while. I wonder if that did happen in one way or another in the live taping, and it did just for whatever reason they ended up deciding not to use it. If they decided not to use it because they want to leave the door open in case he wants to come back, or he wants to leave the door open in case he wants to, you know, not be officially retired. I don't know. There's a lot of different reasons why that might have been left out, but I believe there were reports, and I would have to go and really investigate the spoiler-laden articles to find them, that he did make some kind of announcement of that at the match. So I'm not sure what happened there. Maybe someone who was at that show and was listening or has the rundown on that can give us the scoop or explain to us what happened.
Yeah, because it's, I shouldn't come away from the TV. If he is retired, I shouldn't come away from watching the weekly TV unsure. It should be pretty clear. When Bully Ray didn't retire, and yet at the time it was clear that he was retiring. So it's that kind of thing. If he's really done, it's very weird that they wouldn't air his retirement speech in front of the crowd, because that's a touching, sort of nice conclusion to a career that you want to, you want everybody, all his fans, to be able to see and embrace, not just the fans who happen to be in Fairfax on this one night.
Yeah.
Or the fans who follow him on Twitter. And no, for a guy with a career that he's had, he deserves more of a retirement announcement than a tweet.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know what happened here, unless there's going to be something, a bigger announcement down the line. I really am not sure. And I think you're absolutely right. I would have liked to see, if there was some kind of speech made, if there was some kind of comment made at the live taping, I would really have preferred to see that on screen, because someone with a career like his, a team that means so much to ROH, like the Motor City Machine Guns, does deserve a better send off than that. And it's great that they're highlighting Saban right now as a way of like giving him a position of, you know, giving him a singles position in ROH, but like we want to have a proper goodbye if Shelley is leaving us, at least, you know, even if it's only for a while, like everybody deserves that. Viewers deserve that. Longtime ROH fans deserve that.
Yeah, so I guess if you have any further information on Shelley's retirement or possible just hiatus, talkinghonor@gmail.com. But we don't want to take away from the match itself, from Saban and Silas, because that was the real story here. It seemed like I came away from this match. I love Silas Young, but I came away from this match feeling like this was a Chris Saban showcase.
This was a Chris Saban showcase.
He was on offense for most of the match. He was the one who really stood out here. Silas hit it, some of his usual offense, the combination he does. He tried to do the Milwaukee plunge before Saban moved out of the way. But it was all about Saban. And after the match, we got the classic Punishment walks out with the title and kind of holds it up and stares at Saban. So, yeah, an interesting development for sure. You know, a month ago, we would not have foreseen us being in this situation.
No, it's exciting. It makes me wonder, you know, it makes me excited for what we're going to see from Chris Saban and in the future, because, you know, he's obviously very talented. Obviously, he's a guy that they want to keep around. Obviously, a guy who can't work in a tag team format right now. So, or, you know, could eventually with someone else. But the fact that they want to give him a solo position, even for a limited run, is exciting to me, because it means perhaps we're going to get to see more and more of him. That being said, I wonder, like, so at this point, with number one contenders match, him having won it, does that mean he gets to go, you know, he gets to make his challenge right away? Like the first TV title challenge we're going to see is Punishment and Saban?
Well, my thinking was, because they framed it as a number one contender match, not for a shot at the television title.
Yes.
Like when Chucky Kenny and Eli won a shot at the six-man titles, they got it 2 weeks later on TV. This wasn't framed as Saban will earn a shot at the title. It's a number one contender. So that makes me think that this is going to be more of a prolonged thing. Like, maybe he'll get a shot at Death Before Dishonor in September, or maybe at probably not Honor Reunited, because that's a week and a half. So that'd be my guess, is Death Before Dishonor, as opposed to, say, 2 weeks from now on TV.
Yeah. Well, and that's exciting, because, again, that's a pay-per-view event. It's a fairly big one. So, again, it's giving Saban a highlighted spot that he hasn't gotten to have recently.
You love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at pwpodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Pritchard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts.
Yeah, and it's good, because Punishment needed kind of I feel like every champion needs strong contenders, not just sort of contender of the week, contender of the month, but strong storylines. So this gives them a month and a half to really ramp up their issues with each other. Right now they have no real issues, but it's Punishment, so there will be issues soon. Yeah.
I mean, are we going to start seeing like Punishment like randomly attack Saban before a match? Like, is that what we are?
Chokeslamming him through tables, yeah, and things like that. That is his motif.
Yeah, and you know, as important as developing some kind of heat or developing some kind of momentum is before their match, whenever that match might be, I would really like to see them go a different route than maybe just going the same path that they went with Punishment and Paige, because, you know, we still have not quite settled that Paige and Punishment problem. So like, that issue is still there. And to go down the same route with Saban would feel like we're just kind of, you know, setting up the same storyline, that the same unfinished storyline that, you know, we just dealt with. So it would be cool for them to do something a little different with us.
Well, it'll have to be a different story of some sort because Saban and Paige are so different. Paige is sort of the reckless and the brawler, hardcore kind of things sometimes. Like, he can hold his own when he's backed into, say, a strap match against Kaz, or a tables match against, or a no DQ against Martinez Street.
Yeah.
Saban, not so much. And Saban's story will presumably be that he's going off on his own as a singles wrestler for the first time in years, and what that looks like and what that entails.
Yeah.
But before we move on, I mean, what does this mean for Silas? Because he lost the TV title again, and now what?
Yeah, I don't know. And I will admit, I wouldn't say that I didn't enjoy this match. I enjoyed it. I always enjoy seeing work from either of these guys. I didn't get a whole lot of chemistry, like a whole lot of like in-ring chemistry from either of them. And I felt like it was start. I think it picked up towards the second half of the match. I will say if you were less familiar with Silas, you might walk away from this match kind of thinking him a weaker competitor. I felt like he came off kind of a weaker in this match.
Yeah, and that's my fear, is I am a big fan of Silas, especially when he has something that he can really sink his teeth into, like his long feud with Dalton Castle. And so my kind of hope was once he lost the TV title, that like Dalton, it'd be the start of a climb up the card, especially because we've talked on the show many times about how there's not a lot of main event heels these days. So I kind of thought maybe this would be a chance for Silas to kind of rise up the ranks a bit, head towards the main event, maybe like even put himself to the test and see if he has what it takes to hang in the main event scene. But coming away from this, I'm afraid that he's sort of gonna end up more like Kenny King, or, you know, worst case scenario, like Josh Woods, and just start to fall down the card instead.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be afraid.
I don't want him to end up where Shane Taylor is.
I don't know that you're in like Josh Woods danger. You might be in Shane Taylor danger. It's starting to kind of feel like he's occupying that like mid card spot, similar to what Shane Taylor does, similar to what Silas Young's, you know, buddies, Beer City Bruiser and Brian Malonis are, that similar to those spots too.
Well, and so maybe that's an option. Maybe Silas and Bruiser Malonis decide to enter the six-man division for a while instead.
That would work. That would be great. And maybe a worthwhile use of Silas, other than just giving him matches that they might keep getting set up for losses.
Yeah, I'd be okay with that for sure. But last thing on the TV title, we've kind of moved on from it, but there was a limited run series called Dojo Pro. And the winner of that series was promised an ROH television title shot at some point. As far as I know, there hasn't been any updates since then.
That is true. So, yeah.
So, yeah, it's long enough now, I feel like we can... This isn't a spoiler for anybody. If you haven't watched Dojo Pro by now, you're probably not intending to. But Aaron Solo is out there somewhere with a contract for a shot at the TV title at some point, and I have no idea when that's happening.
Yeah, no idea. And... curious, and my original thought was it might be, you know, at Death or Dishonor, but with Saban in contention now, I'm not sure where that puts Solo as far as his, you know, his turn. I feel like he gets first, right? Because, you know, his win, technically, chronologically speaking, comes earlier, but that contract can be used whenever. There wasn't a specified date, so it's possible we won't see that for a little while longer, or we could see it in a couple of weeks. I really don't know.
Yeah, I don't know if him winning that means that Solo is going to be joining ROH sort of full-time or even part-time. We'll see him on a regular basis, and they'll build up to him cashing in his title shot. Or if this is going to be one of these Honor Club things where, you know, at Global Wars or at one of these other shows, he just gets his title shot that night, in the same way that we've seen other people get title shots at Honor Club events without necessarily earning them, per se.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, that we see that pretty much anytime they do any kind of international tour, anytime they do any of their big, like, tours, there's always title shots from visiting talent. They did a couple of those when they did their last, when they did the Honor United tour back in May. They did it on War of the Worlds tour as well. Like, there's always...
Yeah, Sumi defended against Chardonnay, I want to say.
Yeah.
And it's not like Chardonnay had picked up a bunch of wins to earn a shot. It was just... Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, there's title defenses that happen in, from guesting talent. So a Honor Club event, one of these house show or, you know, one of these house show type events might be perfectly fine for a solo to make it. But I wonder if almost that seems like a lesser way to give them that title shot. If part of that title shot is also that they get to be on an episode of ROH television.
Yeah, see, we had a lot of question marks surrounding Dojo Pro, and then when we found out who the director's involvement, we decided to distance ourselves from the show, so I haven't been keeping track on news.
Yeah.
But maybe something will come out. Maybe once something is confirmed about Solo's involvement with ROH, we'll hear about it.
Yeah.
One way or another. We'll hear about it through ROH channels, put it that
way. Yeah, absolutely. I'm very interested, but again, I stand by what we decided with Dojo Pro, and I'm not following up on any other, like, Dojo Pro-related news. So I'm trusting ROH just to, like, you know, let us know when we're going to see this guy get his title shot.
In the meantime, we had one other match on this week's show. Hero versus villain Shane. Hurricane Helms versus Martin Skrull. And... This, I don't know.
Yeah.
What do you think, Adam?
Oh, no.
You don't want to go first?
I mean, I don't know. I have a lot of questions about what a match like this means for Marty Skrull. Not so many thoughts on the match itself. I mean, masked villain versus masked hero is fun. There were some, like, fun spots on this. But... Overall, I found this match to be excruciatingly long for what it was. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, my thing, I was surprised at how straightforward it was. I kind of was expecting a comedy match.
Yeah, me too.
Like, I thought there'd be a lot of shenanigans with Marty, like with the flower, and maybe, I don't know what Hurricane pulls out of his bag of tricks, but he can certainly be fun. In the right capacity. We saw that's how the Hurricane became so beloved, was his time in WWF when he was just this fun, goofy character, not discounting Shane Helms's wrestling abilities, which he can wrestle as well. But when he was Hurricane, he was always more of comedy relief. And that's what I was expecting here. And we didn't really get that. We got an eye poke. We got a low blow behind the ref's back. But beyond that, it was pretty much just a sort of a straightforward match.
Yeah. And honestly, I kind of would have preferred this particular matchup, I think I would have preferred some more comedic elements to it because the straightforward stuff didn't wow me. I mean, we got to see Marty kind of do his Marty moves, and there was, you know, work with various submissions and the, you know, Japanese stranglehold here and various other, like, you know, chokes and grabs. But, like, yeah, it didn't cohere into anything that was particularly entertaining, and I think I would have preferred if they were going to have a match of this type, like just go for the comedy route, because I think that would have been a better use for all the time that it was given.
Yeah, I don't know if Helms was a step behind or if they just didn't have very good chemistry, but there were a couple moments where I thought it was slow, like slower than I would have expected. I don't know. I mean, Helms isn't that old. He's been wrestling for 27 years, but he started wrestling when he was 17. So that's like, you know, he's the same age as the Hardy boys, roughly, because they grew up together. And you see Jeff Hardy wrestling on SmackDown these days, and he's not what he was 10, 15 years ago, but he can still hang with Shinsuke Nakamura.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know what it was about this, and yeah, I don't know. I don't want I really don't know how I feel about Shane. Is he going to be wrestling for ROH regularly. When they announced he was coming back and he was teaming with Delirious, especially, I thought this is just for like one or two appearances, and I was convinced he was going to be in the new.
You were. You absolutely were.
Every week I was like, I'm predicting this. I'm going to be so right, and I was wrong. This is my opportunity to admit I was wrong.
Yeah.
Because it hasn't happened yet, at least.
It hasn't happened yet. Doesn't say that it can't. I mean, you're... No,
anything can.
Exactly.
He could be a world champion in 2 months.
Sure. Absolutely. Right? Let's go with that. But you're not necessarily, you haven't been proven wrong indefinitely. You're just been proven wrong in the moment. But if he's going to be around, I want to see them do something with him that's not this. I don't know. I'm very underwhelmed by the match. I didn't exactly have high expectations going in. So that's, you know, my expectations were low to begin with. And this was kind of where I thought it might be. I was maybe underwhelmed isn't even the right word. I was exactly where I thought we would be. Wasn't pleasantly surprised. Wasn't totally horrified. Just, you know, I knew I'd be underwhelmed and I kind of was there. Although I will go back. I will say again, like, I just feel this match was so long. I felt like this match took way more time than it needed.
Don't just listen to PW Torch's brand of wrestling coverage. Read it too, every day at pwtorch.com. Join me Monday nights for my live coverage of Raw, Tuesday nights for my live coverage of SmackDown, Sunday nights for my live coverage of WWE pay-per-views, and keep up on the news and read exclusive editorials and special features every day at pwtorch.com.
Yeah, and I don't think this means anything for Skrull's trajectory. I think it was just, hey, we have the villain on the roster, and we have a little superhero on the roster. How can we not book this match at some point? You have to. It's hero versus villain. It fights itself. But beyond after this, I think Marty goes back to... I don't know. I don't know who he goes back to, but I think he goes back to his prominence near the top of the card where he...
Yeah, that's my problem. That's kind of my problem right now, though, is that I don't know who Marty fights right now, because...
He's in that tough spot where he's beloved, cheered by the fans, but is doing heel tactics.
Yeah, and he needs to, and he's got the kind of prominence that you want him to be taking on like big competitors, right? You want him to see like he's a main eventer at this point in ROH. But who does he fight? Like who do we see Marty go against?
Matt Taven. No, we said Taven and Lethal.
Lethal is the title shot. Taven's the only other option. Who's another guy who's in that league that he can work against? Because Dalton's not working right now.
Kenny King, and that furthers King's story of King becoming a villain of himself.
Okay, but that works for King, but not necessarily for Marty.
Well, Marty works as like the foil in that scenario where Marty is an established villain. King is thinking of becoming a villain, and it's I feel like there could be a story.
I think there could be. I think, though, I come back to the question of like, what does that do for Marty? Like, Marty gets to be a foil, or Marty gets to be like a villain inspiration for Kenny, or show him the potential of embracing the dark side. But again, like, that's not really Marty's story. It's still Kenny's story. We need to be operating. There needs to be a storyline for Marty that is about him.
Yeah. So, well, I think my thing is you could find a story for a character development for Marty within that story as well. He discovers something about himself in the process at the same time.
Yeah. I don't see that. I don't see.
Like ships passing in the night, where as they feud, King becomes more successful as a villain. Marty starts to stumble as a villain and questions whether or not he really is the villain still, or who he is, sort of thing.
I like it. I don't see it, but I like it.
All right, that's the best idea. Yeah. I don't have to write it.
That so, is true.
It's not up to me. It's up to the guys.
For something like that, though, I feel like with Kenny King, like it made sense for Austin Aries to be playing this kind of devil on the shoulder because they have a close relationship. I don't like. There's just not like a real connection between between Kenny and Marty. And like, yes, like that doesn't really matter. That can be fabricated pretty easily. But like, you know, with Austin Aries and with Kenny King, it made sense in ways that like Marty is a villain, but he's like Marty is the villain. Marty's a heel in very specific ways. And he plays his heel very specifically, whereas Austin Aries is a heel in a way that like Kenny King could approximate without like much pretension. Change a little bit about how King presents himself, and you've got a heel that's in the mode of Austin Aries.
Sure.
Yeah. But anyway, so I just, and for me, it's a question of like, you know, right now Marty's in this weird, awkward spot in ROH, and he's going into this big match with Okada and All In. I'm just wondering, like, where is Marty standing in ROH as we build up to this big All In match? Yes, ROH does not own All In, and All In is operating, you know, at least pseudo on its own independent terms as outside of the realm of ROH storylines. That being said, they do have an impact on audiences, you know, following of a star like Marty. And so I'm just wondering, you know, by the time we get to the end of August, where is Marty going to be in ROH, and what is that going to mean for crowd's reaction to him at All In? I don't think there's any kind of major plummet. I just kind of wonder.
Well, next week is the Honor Reunited Tour, 3 dates in the UK, where Marty Scurll happens to be from. First night in Edinburgh, it is Marty teaming with the Young Bucks to take on Punishment Martinez and the Briscoes. And the second night, Marty's in a four-corner survival match against the three of the losers from the day one of the International Cup. So he is facing, I want to say either Flip Gordon or Kip Sabian, Adam Page or Joe Hendry, and Christopher Daniels or Jimmy Havoc. It's going to be a four-corner match featuring three of those guys and Marty.
Looking forward to that.
And then he's not booked for London yet, but there's only 3 matches booked for London right now. So that card's a mystery.
Yeah.
Consider it's in a week.
Yeah, wow. Just that is weird that there's only 3 matches announced for that. But I guess some of it's going to depend on who's around post the International Cup and who they're going to be reusing in various ways. So maybe that's why.
So there's that. And then, I don't know, maybe Marty might not even have a big storyline in ROH in August or September either, because we already have the main event announced for ROH's next pay-per-view, Death Before Dishonor, September 28th, Las Vegas, Nevada. The main event is 10-man tag, Bullet Club versus Chaos. So Marty Scurll, Cody, Hangman Page, and the Young Bucks against Kazuchika Okada, Tomohiro Ishii, Rocky Romero, Chucky T, and Beretta.
Yeah, that's a major match. It's going to be really great to see Okada back in an ROH event. And it's cool to get to see the best friends involved, because they are stablemates of, they are in Chaos. They are in the Chaos faction in New Japan. So this is going to be a fun one. I have no predictions as far as outcomes and things like that, but it's a fun first match to set up Death Before Dishonor.
Yeah, but like we were just saying, I mean, if Cody, Scurll, Page, and the Bucks are all involved in this 10-man match, they might not have any sort of like big, Cody and Marty might not have any sort of big singles feuds in the month of September, right? They'll be building to the 10-man. And Okada and Ishii won't be around on ROH TV. They probably won't be around on ROH TV to build up this match. Rocky Romero maybe could, but even that's doubtful. So I don't know. We'll probably just see a lot of, I guess, best friends against the Bucks, best friends against Cody and Marty in different combinations.
Possible.
Maybe. Yeah. And then after that, then the big question will be, okay, where do guys like Cody and Marty and Hangman end up? Do they have stories outside of Bullet Club, or is it a Bullet Club group story at that time?
Yeah, I mean, it's in stark contrast to the very clear-cut storyline that is happening for Bullet Club over in New Japan. Right now, Bullet Club in ROH is kind of just in a stasis point. The whatever is happening between like the guys involved in the G1 and in and around the G1 is not affecting, obviously, is not affecting guys like Cody and the Young Bucks and Skrull. It's affecting Paige, obviously, because he's in the G1. So I don't know. That storyline for Bullet Club is just everything's kind of at a stasis point in ROH.
For now. But after All In, a lot could change.
Well, and even after the G1, I mean, I'm not like the guys are going to be appearing. So in the next couple of days, we're going to start seeing the Young Bucks and Skrull pop up for tag matches before the block matches for these final nights of the G1. And who knows, by the end of the G1 climax, that storyline could have bled over completely into ROH realm. So yeah, between All In, there's a lot of storyline to develop before we get to Death Before Dishonor at the end of September.
Next week on ROH television, 3 matches announced. It's going to be the Briscoes versus the Bouncers in non-title action, but presumably sort of an unofficial proving ground match. If Malonis and Bruiser could somehow pick up the win, they'd have to be in line for a title shot.
Yeah.
Then 4 Corner Survival to crown number one contender to Sumi Sakai's Women of Honor Championship. Tennille Dashwood, Kelly Klein, Madison Rain, and Karen Q. So, again, big stipulations there, big consequences.
Yep.
And then the main event, once again, it's Bully Ray versus Cheeseburger. But this time it's 6-man action. Bully Ray has his monster goons with him, Punishment Martinez and Shane Taylor. Cheeseburger has Flip Gordon with him, looking for revenge on Bully. And Josh Woods, because they needed another guy.
And because he's got beef with Taylor.
Yeah, that's true. I forgot about that, actually.
Yeah.
I was looking at it, and I was like, Josh doesn't have any involvement with Bully Ray at this point. And they were selling this as Team Bully versus Team Burger.
They were kind of selling this as like a feuding match. My problem is that works for Ray and Taylor and Burger, Gordon, and Woods. But where does Martinez fit into that? He doesn't.
No. So maybe Saban will show up in some capacity.
Yeah. I mean, from, you know, Flip Gordon having some like connection to Paige via Bullet Club, but that's a kind of a stretch. But yeah, this is mainly a way for Bully Ray to keep getting matches with, you know, yeah.
Yeah, and hopefully we'll get some sort of figure out where Bully goes from here, whether it's into another match with Flip or whether we do get to see Bully versus Colt Cabana at some point. I don't know. There's some question marks hanging over Bully Ray right now.
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be a lot that falls apart in this match as far as, you know, disqualification-worthy events. It's just a matter of how many other people are going to get roped into this match before the end of it, before the bell gets rung over and over and over again.
And all of that we'll find out next week on ROH. This is Talking Honor. You can email us at talkinghonor@gmail.com. Send us your predictions on who might be in the All-In Battle Royal, on who Kenny Omega might end up competing against, on who Marty Scurll could end up feuding with next in ROH, on who you think is going to win the number one contendership for the women's title, and whether Josh Woods, Shane Taylor, and King Mo will ever throw down. All of that, you can find me on Twitter at Talking Honor. Emily is on Twitter at
Forked PGH. Forked PGH. That's Twitter.
That's our show. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week to discuss everything we just told you.
Bye.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free editions of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan 4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer. And there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan 4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip.